You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. We're back, and if you aren't already subscribing to the pod, please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, or wherever you get podcasts, Spotify as well. Subscribe, rate, and review. That is the best way to support the show. On today's show, we're actually going to talk about some news that has broke as we are literally 2 weeks away from camp now. Over the weekend, the Cavs officially came to terms with two players that we knew they were likely going to have on the team this year. That's David Nwaba and Rodney Hood. Both will only be with the team for a guaranteed 1 year and are on pretty inexpensive contracts. But to help me break it down is Jeff Siegel from For the Sword, Forbes, and a whole bunch of other places, as well as his own site, earlybirdrights.com. Jeff, what's going on?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I am ready for basketball to get back. And I'm also glad for my own sanity that we're not going to be dealing with Rodney Hood / David Nwaba questions like on September 23rd, the night before meeting. I'm just glad that I now get 2 weeks to just really think about this Cavs roster, think about how it's going to fit, what sort of questions I want to ask on media day. Just, I'm glad I don't have to like worry about really random stuff that doesn't matter that much in the big picture. And I was in both cases here, I was slightly surprised by the outcome, but also when I got done talking with you about it and thinking about it in some more detail post the news just breaking it, they both kind of make some sense.
Yeah, I think it's sort of the end of Cleveland summer, really, and it took a little bit longer than we expected it to. Obviously, they still have some extension negotiations, perhaps with Larry Nance. Sam Decker technically is open for an extension, but that's definitely not going to happen.
yeah.
You know, I guess Nance would be the guy left. And other than that, I think they're pretty much ready to go into the regular season with this roster. It's obviously, you know, a far cry from where we were a year ago, but it's, you know, I think they're going to try to compete at the beginning of the year and sort of see how it goes.
I'm going to let you, as the guest, pick where you want to start. These are neither of these players, I think, are particularly, I want to be kind here. They're not particularly like just overflowing with I think an intrigue this season. They both have interesting things about their futures that will really be decided this season. But who do you want to start with, Nwaba or Hood?
I think we could start with Hood just because he's been with the team over the last, you know, 21 games of last season plus the playoffs, and I think that's, you know, he's somebody who, you know, I think the Cavaliers, if they could just sign him up to whatever they want, they would, you know, they would like to have him around on a longer term contract. Obviously, he was looking for reportedly about $11 million a year, which is just astoundingly not what he was going to get. That was never going to happen for him. But if he, you know, if they could have gotten him at $7 or $8 million, I think they would have liked that over a four-year contract. You know, he decided instead he's going to sign the $3.5 million qualifying offer and take his talents into unrestricted free agency next summer, where the Cavs won't have match rights. They, you know, the league will be flush with cap space next summer. He's, you know, perhaps in a prime position on this Cavs team to where he can, you know, take some of that role that we saw him with his first couple of years in Utah, where he had the ball in his hands a lot more. He was taking a lot more shots. He was, you know, they were running some of the offense even through him. You know, he had a pretty good assist rate. You know, he had a pretty good assist to usage rate when he was a wing in Utah those first 2 years. Doesn't turn the ball over that much. Like, it just was an all around pretty efficient player, you know, those first couple of years in Utah. And obviously things have sort of fallen off for him, you know, over the last couple of years, both in Utah and in Cleveland.
Yeah, so the full details of this situation, if you don't already know, is Rodney Hood accepted his qualifying offer. The Cavs were reportedly offering around $7 million a year over 3 years. He wanted, I've heard, there's been reported anywhere from 9 to as much as 11. For me, if I'm the Cavs, I think I'm okay with this. I don't love getting a guy that you traded for last year in Hood, and you basically only have him under control for this year. And I think if you look at the situation there now, this, I think, would, at least in theory, increase the odds that he is going to be gone next summer. in that regard, it's not great. If you end up with the only guys next a year from now, the only two guys you have left from the midseason roster reshuffle are Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson, that's okay, especially if Nance improves, but maybe not ideal. With Hood, I think, though, 11 would have been way too much. I think 9 is a little bit more than I'd be comfortable paying, just because this is a guy that was very inconsistent in his career so far. He's already almost 26, so you have to wonder how much there really is for him left to improve on. He's been wildly dealing with some issues the last couple of years. He had kind of a meltdown in the playoffs last year, not just refusing to go into a game, but also getting pulled from the starting lineup after the first game. That being said, there is a really big opportunity for him this year. I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. Ty has been completely silent since I'm really going to, in 2 weeks, he's going to have a lot of, I think, fair questions to be asked of him about what his vision is for this team. I expect him to say a lot of variations of "I forgot" or "I don't know" or "I don't remember," things that he did a lot last year, and I expect him to play things close to the vest. But I think if we're looking at what would be a possible Cavs starting lineup, Rodney Hood, I think, factors into a lot of these. And if you're him, that is what you want. That is an opportunity for him as a player to drive up his value. If I was him, I'd be very, though, a little concerned that even if he has a really good year, maybe teams are smarter next summer. All it takes is like the Kings to give him like $12 million a year in some crazy situation. But he needs to have a really big year to, I think, make this worth his while. And I'd be a little surprised too if he lives up to that, even if he say starts 75 games as the team's two guard or small forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he's in the starting lineup, especially if the Cavaliers go away from George Hill and toward a guy like Colin Sexton and Hood, I mean, really with either one of those guys in the lineup, to be honest, I think Hood will have some chances with the ball in his hands, will have some chances to sort of show that he's more than just, you know, a three-point shooter and a mid-range jump shooter. He's never been all that good at getting to the rim, but was good finishing last season when by the time he got to Cleveland, has always been a solid mid-range jump shooter, has usually been a good three-point shooter other than, of course, in the playoffs last year. And then in the playoffs the year before with Utah, it seems like he's, you know, it's unfortunate, but it does seem like he's one of those guys who just doesn't scale up to the playoff level of competition. And so if you have to play him in that same role, he just doesn't do that well in that role. Obviously, he's still, you know, just 4 years into his career. He can sort of bounce back from some of these bad playoff runs the last 2 years, but he's certainly off to a bad start in that sense. You know, and how he fits in that team, you know, you can see a pretty decent role for him as sort of a secondary playmaker on the wing who can do some things with the ball in his hands, who can get to his spots in mid-range. You know, whether that's somebody you really want is, you know, up for discussion. That's why they were only willing to give him, say, you know, $7 million a year rather than 11. And even, like you said, 9 would have probably been pushing it for me as well. I just don't see him as somebody who's worth more. Even if he is a starter on this team, he's not really worth that starting level money, or even below starting level money, even at that $11 or $9 million. As a bench guy, you know, who can come in and create some offense and who won't kill you on defense. He's not good on that end, but he's not getting killed on that end. I think I think as a bench role for $7, $8, $9 million makes a lot of sense for him by the time, you know, he gets to play out this year. Whether he can live up to you know, a contract in the 9 to 10 maybe $1 million range, you know, remains to be seen. Obviously, having him on $3.5 million is a good deal, even though it's just for the 1 year. That's a positive deal for them. But I, you know, it's whether he lives up to it or not is going to, you know, come down to, you know, can he hit his threes? Can he take more threes than mid-range jumpers? Can he, you know, can he defend at a decent level, and can he, you know, be sort of a secondary playmaker?
I think he probably ends up starting at shooting guard, but tell me if this is crazy. I don't know if I'd want him starting at small forward over Jetty.
It depends on what they think of Osman long term, and do they think Osman is the guy? Do they think he's going to be, you know, the long-term starting small forward? Then you might split the time between those two guys, and you might really, you know, try to see whether you can split the small forward minutes or maybe try to play them together, because Hood can handle the ball a little bit. Osman, you know, fits well in that sense that the two of them can sort of play off of one another. I'm not sure that that's the direction that they'll go. I think they'll start the season with Hood, you know, in that spot, but Osman may very well take it from him before the turn of the calendar to 2019.
I think the weird thing is Osman and Hood are both probably twos, like big twos, ideally, right? Like that to me seems reasonable, but just the factor of not having LeBron means you have to have a lot of minutes filled at the three spot, and like, who else are you going to have to do it? Sam Decker shouldn't be playing the three, I would guess. I mean, Nawab is maybe going to defend some threes, but he's a smaller guy anyway. They don't really have any other options there, so maybe he just has to play at least some minutes there. But I'm as anyone who's heard me talk about him or knows just my general opinion of Hood and Osman respectively, like I'm much higher on Jetty, and he's had a very interesting summer in Europe, which we'll get into later this week, I think. But let's turn to David Nwaba. I messaged you right after we found out what his deal was going to be, and for me, I was a little surprised that it's 1 year, $1.5 million. That's a minimum contract. I understand the market for him was not robust, and I sort of don't even – I don't think it's even the money that surprises me. It's just that it's 1 year. If I'm him, I want to get out on the market next summer. That makes sense. But if I'm the Cavs, I probably would have tried to get, like, maybe at least a team option on the second year, even if it costs you a little bit more. That was just a little bit surprising to me, because he profiles to me – a guy like Trevion Graham, who you want in your to bring in and see if you can develop him, and that's probably a more than a 1 year thing. But it's also David Nwaba, so maybe I'm overthinking this.
Yeah, I mean, you want to bring him in and develop him, but he's already, you know, 25 years old. He hasn't really shown at any point through his career that he can be, you know, somebody who you can slot in as a rotation player on a decent team. You know, he had a decent year in like 400 minutes for the Lakers 2 years ago, and then, you know, played, was fine for Chicago last year, but wasn't, you know, didn't jump off the page in any way. You know, can't shoot, turns the ball over too much, isn't really a point guard, but at 6'4", and if you can't shoot, then like you need to have the ball in your hands as a, you know, offensively. But if he's turning the ball over and isn't really that much of a playmaker, then what's his offensive role going to be? And you know, I think he's, you know, a decent defender. Like he's, you know, better than, I think he's probably, you know, better than Hood, obviously, on that end. But, you know, he fouls a lot, is a good rebounder for his position. There's a lot to like about him defensively, but I think it's the offense where, you know, he really can't shoot outside of the paint and gets fouled a ton, but doesn't make his free throws and doesn't have, there's no indication that he can be a shooter long-term. It's not like he's reticent to take the threes, but he makes, you know, 80% of his free throws. If he makes 65% of his free throws, you can't even really point to that as like, oh, he may be a shooter someday. They're going to have to tear his whole shot down to nothing and then rebuild him back up, which of course is probably a multi-year process and is not something that they're going to be interested in after, you know, signing to him to just a one-year contract. You know, he can hit the market again next summer. They can make him a restricted free agent if they want to, because he only has 2 years. He'll have 3 years after this coming year. They can make him a restricted free agent. I'm not sure if he'll even live up to that, to where they'll want to pay him, you know, the $1.8 million, roughly $1.9 million that he'll need on a qualifying offer. You know, I like him. Like, I think he's a decent, you know, he's a good defender, and there's room for him to grow, obviously, as an offensive player. But, you know, he'll be, you know, 26 at the end of this year. Is, you know, what is his long-term offensive role is what bothers me the most.
I think that's 100% fair. I think the Cavs could be in a position where they're drafting from a wing-heavy group next year, and you don't want a guy like Nawab, or maybe even Hood, for that matter, who's going to, again, going to be 26 very soon. These guys are sort of similar, at least in age regard. You don't want them blocking minutes for Osman, blocking minutes for someone, let's say they get Reddish or RJ Barrett or someone like that at the top of the draft next year. That's way down the line, but that is certainly possible. Which one of these, if you're the Cavs, are you just in a vacuum? Which one of these two outcomes for both these guys are you happier with? If you're Kobe Altman and his staff, is one of these deals to you a better result for you than the other?
I mean, I guess the Nwaba deal is probably better, even though that's a worse player, you know, a worse overall player and a worse overall prospect, just because, you know, Nwaba probably had some other places he could have gone. A minimum contract is never a bad thing. It's very hard for a guy to be a bad deal on a minimum contract, you know, especially a guy who has some NBA level skills. I know we just sort of killed him there, but like he's an NBA level defender, and he can get to the rim whenever he wants to, and you know, gets fouled at a good rate. And if he could just make his free throws or like make a jump shot every once in a while, like that would be great. And you know, so I think that, and the fact that they can make him restricted at the end of the year gives them some upside, that if this guy comes in and is all of a sudden like that, it just his third year is the breakout year and it really works for him, then they can make him restricted and they can hold on to him long term. Whereas Hood, you know, it seemed like this was always going to be the outcome. As soon as, you know, we got through the first, you know, couple of weeks of July, they didn't pull the qualifying offer before July 13th. And then he just sort of languished out there. All the cap space dried up. If he's still looking for $11 million, then it has to be from the Cavs or in a sign and trade. Once teams sort of started getting their rosters together, it sort of felt like inevitable that Hood was going to take the qualifying offer and try again next summer. And, you know, given what we've seen from him so far, I'm not sure what his long-term future looks like. Obviously, this is going to be, you know, such a massive year for him. We really don't know what he is, you know, at this point in his career. Is he going to get back into being more of a playmaker, or, you know, is he going to try to be a 3-and-D point guard who doesn't have a lot of, or a 3-and-D wing who just doesn't have a lot of that, you know, the defensive acumen? You know, whether can he take a step forward on that end? Can he take a step forward as a playmaker? I guess the expectations for Hood are higher than Nwaba, but they're, you know, the expectation that he can actually reach those expectations is probably lower.
To wrap it up on this, well, two quick things. Number one, just give me your 30-second Isaiah Taylor take, since I have not spent the time to talk about him on this podcast
yet. I mean, he's just not very good. Like, that's just sort of the end of it. Like, he's a third point guard in that he's just sort of kind of decent at everything. Doesn't really, you know, doesn't shoot very well from outside, but can get to the rim. He's incredibly fast. He's one of the better, he's probably one of the fastest guys in the league. He's a very, very good athlete, but doesn't have a ton else outside of that. You know, had some playmaking juice for the Hawks last year, but wasn't, you know, just, well, it wasn't fantastic in that regard. You know, obviously, you know, cannot shoot outside of the paint, just like we talked about with Nwaba, but finishes at the rim decently for a guy his size. You know, he sort of can do a little bit of everything in terms of getting to the rim and finishing and getting fouled, but doesn't make, you know, doesn't really make his free throws, can't make his three-point shots, doesn't really have a pull-up game in mid-range and pick and roll. So where he, you know, where he fits is sort of as a third point guard, as an emergency stopgap if George Hill or Colin Sexton has to go out for any amount of time. Obviously, George Hill has had some injury concerns in his career. You know, you're not sure how Colin Sexton is going to work out immediately in terms of his production on the floor. And so, you know, I think Taylor gets overpowered defensively as well. He's not very big. He can use his speed, but is not, you know, not a particularly big guy, especially if he's playing the two guard, which he did a little bit last year with Atlanta. So, you know, I wouldn't, this has obviously gone on a little bit more than 30 seconds, but he's a fine third point guard. He's got some athletic upside. He's only 24. So there's, you know, maybe a little bit of room to grow as a 3-point shooter, as an off the dribble shooter, perhaps as a playmaker. But, you know, I don't think that this is a long-term partnership.
Yeah, I have no idea if he's on the roster opening day, but I'm into the Cavs trying to find like a backup for Sexton in a vacuum. Last thing, there have been a number of random NBA stories that have just popped up. We've gotten some just random off-the-wall news in the last week or so, to varying degrees. Between that, the WNBA, what's like one or two basketball things that you've just kind of been enjoying as we get very, very close to training camp?
I mean, the WNBA has been great. Like, I don't know how many people are interested in that. I know that's something that they're really fighting for, is to try to up their interest.
Go watch.
But
if you are not watching the WNBA finals, please go watch. I mean, they've been incredible. So maybe one game left. Just please
it's been
watch.
Great. I mean, the Sue Bird against Diana Taurasi in the game five. Diana Taurasi, you know, in the series before that. You know, it's just she's been fantastic. Sue Bird's been fantastic. Brianna Stewart's just like this lanky, tall, like Kevin Durant type player. Like she's just sort of kind of all over the place. I like Elena Delladonna a ton. I think she's probably my favorite. She's easily my favorite WNBA player. Just in the way that she can get wherever she needs to go, but isn't like overly athletic and it doesn't like get there very quickly, but just gets there. Like she's fantastic to watch. She's really fun. You know, it's been a great run in the playoffs. These finals have been super fun. You know, so, you know, if you're liking basketball and if you're missing out on NBA basketball, you know, you gotta tune in for the WNBA.
Mine is that I love that Mark Price got hired by the Nuggets.
Yeah, that crossed earlier today, I think, but I haven't really dived into that, but I guess that'll be good for Jamal Murray. I hope that'll be good for Jamal Murray. It'd be great if he can, you know, help if he can help Murray take a step forward in as a shooter.
He Mark Price is this guy who was, I don't know if he how successful he was as a coach in the NBA, but he was a very good shooter, even on a small sample size in his day. He is someone that obviously was a very, very good point guard in the league for a long time and is pretty well respected from everyone I've talked to. Interviewed for the Cavs job way back when, the summer that they hired David Blatt. And who knows? I mean, maybe he wouldn't have been good, and he's been coaching at Charlotte University the last couple seasons, so it's interesting to see him back in the NBA. And it's just a random Cavs-y kind of connection that I mean, I'm also very into, like, C.J. McCollum going to Bronze games. Just very into, like, the whole idea of, like, Larry Nance, like, that's probably going to be tailgating this year. I'm just, like, football is very tough for me. But I'm, like, just very into, like, the NBA players going to, like, NFL games thing. Specifically when it's just, like, in Cleveland or, like, D.N. Waiters at Philadelphia Eagles games. It's just
Yeah, it's been cool. There's the whole you seeing them in the summer and you sort of see how the NBA – markets itself, but it's not even that the NBA is like telling C.J. McCollum to go to these games or telling Dion Waiters to show up, you know, at the Philly games. Like, it's just that's who these guys are. It's like sort of the culture that permeates the entire NBA. That like it's a 12-month a year sport at this point. Like, even during football, like they're talking about, you know, that when Aaron Rodgers comes back in the game with the knee injury, like the first thing they're talking about is Reed and the New York Knicks or Paul Pierce with the Celtics. Like, it's, you know, it's sort of permeating into the other sports in a way that as a basketball guy is obviously great for me.
Yeah, I'm very into it. But Jeff, we're again 2 weeks away from Cavs media day, a whole bunch of camps opening up in that time. Just if people aren't already, just give them a quick plug of where they're going to be able to, where they can, for at least the moment, find everything you have going on right now, and at least tell them about early bird rights.
Yeah, for now, and the emphasis is on for now, you can find me at Early Bird Rights is the site I founded, editor-in-chief over there. You can find every cap situation, the entire league. If you're interested in salary cap stuff throughout the year, I'm going to have scouting reports and film breakdowns on the games once we, you know, get some real games started up here. And then, you know, I think I'm going to try to launch some extra stuff on Early Bird Rights before the year starts, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get that done. I'm working on some stuff on that end. And then you can find Cav stuff on Fear the Sword, Atlanta Hawks at Peachtree Hoops, Portland Trailblazers over at Blazers Edge. You can find league-wide stuff at Dime Magazine and Forbes.com. So those are my big ones right now. Obviously, things are still, you know, subject to change over the next month before the season starts, but that's where I'm at for now.
Yeah, if you want to read something I wrote, you can go to the Step Back Today. It's Grid 25 and 25 Under 25 series is up, and I wrote about OG Anunoby and Wendell Carter Jr. I love OG. I'm very excited for Toronto this year. He's part of the reason why I think I might pick Toronto to win the East, but we'll get there. But it's going to be a really fascinating season. You can find Jeff on Twitter at JG Stiegel. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Find me on Twitter at CWMRights, the pod on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Check out Through the Sword for all your latest Cavs news and notes. And thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Cheers.